Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
As Greece and John Corzine are humiliated by failure, as the Congressional Super Committee touches deficit reduction kryptonite, as Occupy Wall Street occupies more of the national debate, we'll check in now with a member of our local congressional delegation well-positioned to talk about it all. Democrat Jim Himes of Connecticut used to work for Goldman Sachs before leaving in 2002 to run a housing nonprofit, then get elected to Congress last year. Now Jim Himes is in a bipartisan group of House members releasing a letter to the Super Committee urging it to go big, to go for an ambitious grand bargain on deficit reduction before its Thanksgiving deadline, to give Americans something to really be thankful for the next 10 years in our economy. We'll talk about that and more now with Congressman Jim Himes, Democrat from Fairfield. Hi, Congressman. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be back.
And just to give everybody a sense of how difficult this is going to be to get them to bipartisan agreement on the Super Committee, here are two very short back-to-back clips of the Democratic co-chair, Senator Patty Murray of Washington, and the Republican co-chair, Republican Jed Henserling from Texas, speaking over the weekend.
Now is the time when everyone needs to be putting some real skin in the game and offering serious compromises.
Certainly, we cannot tax our way out of this crisis. We cannot solve it by simply tinkering around the edges of our entitlement programs.
So polarization reigns. What's in your letter, your bipartisan letter to the bipartisan super committee?
Yeah, well, Brian, it's interesting. Those clips, you know, both of those statements are correct. I'm not sure they're at odds. You know, Patty Murray saying that everybody needs to participate. Nancy Pelosi saying that we need to do something big and bold. Big means entitlements. The president has said entitlements. And Jeb Henserling making the point that taxes alone will not solve this. So I'm not sure that those are the best examples of polarization.
Well, I guess it depends on how you hear Henserling. If he's saying taxation alone won't solve the deficit, obviously, but the Republican position, which I think he's echoing there, has been no new taxes. We won't even consider new taxes.
It has been publicly, that's right. And that's actually why this letter that we've been working on for a long time is important. And I point out that difference in perhaps perception of those two clips because, the world is beating a door to Washington. And by the world, I mean, you know, lots of different community organizations, CEOs, the business community, people like Erskine Bowles and Alan Simpson of different parties saying, solve this, do the grand bargain, get it done. But, of course, as you point out, you know, particularly on the Republican side, where the rhetoric has been very, very uncompromising. You know, Patty Murray used the word compromise in that clip that you said. The rhetoric has been pretty uncompromising. However, the reality is, and this is where this letter is important, you know, we've got 100 signatories to a letter now, a few more Democrats than Republicans, but let's call it more or less 50-50, saying everything is on the table, do the $4 trillion deal. And by the way, it involves the word revenues in there as well as entitlement. So some of those sacred cows or maybe those shibboleths in this letter, people saying, no, let's do it internally, members of Congress. And the point is that you've actually got more people here on Capitol Hill willing to compromise than maybe you might believe if you just watched cable news.
Well, it's really interesting because maybe those members are not on the super committee. Maybe you think they are. But in your group, if you have like 100 signatories, almost half of whom are Republicans, do you see yourself as part of a growing centrist coalition in Congress? Would you use that word that believes moderation can be politically successful?
You know, anybody who is listening to their constituents knows that that is what the great bulk of the American people want. The activist wings of the two parties don't want that. They want us to be uncompromising to fight. However, I think the vast bulk of Americans are saying, guys, you've got to come together. We've got a crisis. I understand that I'm going to need to give up some sacred cows, but you've got to deal. You've got to compromise. You've got to negotiate. So I do think that anybody who's listening to their constituents carefully, rather than just the folks that might elect them in a primary election understands that that's critical. And I also do think, and look, this is partly a result of the debacle of the debt ceiling argument. I do think that people are stepping back here and coming to realize that that is true, and that ideology of any stripe is not going to fly terribly well in 2012.
Listeners, do you agree with Congressman Himes? If you want to call from his district in Connecticut, if you want to call from anywhere, is there a growing hue and cry on the part of constituents of many members of Congress to not dig in and fight with respect to their most partisan positions? If you are in that group that might sign a letter like the one he wrote and that some Republicans and Democrats have signed, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or do you see compromise around this super committee deficit plan as some kind of backing down on principle? 212-433-9692. Or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And how specific do you get? Is this group of 100 calling for certain kinds of provisions to be in the super committee compromise?
Yeah, it's not hugely specific, Brian, and this is really an exercise in what is the key. I don't want to use the word game, but let's use the word game for a moment here in Washington right now, which is really not a policy problem. You know, we had Simpson-Bowles, we had the Rivlin-Domenici proposal, we had the Gang of Six proposal. Folks, there are plenty of policy proposals out there. This is really getting the supercommittee to succeed, and I define success as a just and fair plan for fiscal responsibility over 10 years that hopefully includes, by the way, some near-term infrastructure and other things that will really help ignite job growth in this country. That's really success. We're just trying to get people who might otherwise sort of retreat to the corners of the boxing ring, the ideological purity of wherever you are. For example, on the Democratic side, it would be no touch to entitlements ever. On the Republican side, it's no increase in revenue ever. Both of those statements just don't stand scrutiny. And so this is a political exercise in trying to give people the courage to say, hey, look, there's 100 of us out here who are going to stand by our principles and fight for what we believe in. But at the end of the day, we're going to recognize that to govern means to compromise and that we've got to get this done.
Let me get a couple of quick listener reactions, first of all, and our lines are filling up are full already to talk about this. So listeners, post your comments now to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, or your questions for Congressman Himes from the Finance Committee, one of about 100 members, almost half Republicans, a little more than half Democrats. Himes is a Democrat from Connecticut, urging the supercommittee on the deficit to compromise and come up with something really big to really address the deficit more than the law requires them to do for the next 10 years. Their deadline is Thanksgiving. Dan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I think I'm actually thinking that we should stop compromising because we're trying that route and it's not working. I think the president just has to be bold and be a bit authoritarian right now.
In what respect? Where would you have him go?
With his jobs bill. Especially his jobs bill. And that's the one that the Republicans seem to be, being crybabies about.
Thank you very much. Mark on Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi. This reminds me of someone who robs $10 from you and says, let's compromise by giving you back $5. In the last 2 or 3 years, there have been no tax cuts to reverse. There's been none. There has only been massive spending increases. The problem we have that has been created has been due to spending increases. That's why it's not compromising. It's not compromising to say, well, let's raise some taxes. That gives the robber half of his money. What you have to do is cut back on the thing you did to abuse the situation, namely the spending increases.
Mark, thank you very much. So there you go, Congressman Himes. You have the Democrat calling for no compromises from Manhattan. You have the Republican from Staten Island calling for fewer compromises. And there you are.
Well, yeah, welcome to my world. And I mean that seriously, because, you know, with all due respect, Mark and Dan are not offering, you know, a path to success here. Mark is flat out wrong. I mean, in the 3 years that I've been in Congress, we passed a Recovery Act, 40% of that $900 billion being tax cuts of dozens of different varieties. In December of last year, when the 01 and the 03 tax cuts were legally set to expire, we passed a bill which extended those tax cuts and included a substantial reduction in payroll tax cuts. So Mark is just dead wrong. This last 3 years has been extension of tax cuts and reduction of taxes rather than increase in taxes. And Dan, you know, as much as we all sort of pine for a neat and clean government, by which I suppose the word authoritarian might be associated, the reality is that right now the President of the United States does not hold nearly as much power with respect to where we go in the next 10 years than the 12 members of the Supercommittee do. So the President can propose a bill as he has, but, you know, if we remember back to our Civics 101, it is ultimately Congress that has control over the spending and the taxation. So, welcome to my world. Those are sentiments that I understand, although I think Mark is just dead wrong in his analysis of what has happened in the last couple of years. Well, we have spent too much. No question about it. You know, $2 trillion on wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that I think in retrospect we might have chosen, at least on the Iraq side, not to spend. I don't quibble with him there on that, but on his tax front, he's just dead wrong.
If you're in the center, though, you can get caught in the middle. I saw that New York Times article on you in September that described you as a member of one of Washington's most endangered political species, a Democrat with Wall Street ties. You used to work for Goldman Sachs. Your Connecticut district includes many hedge funds and hedge fund managers, but Occupy Wall Street has made bank a four-letter word in your party. So your Wall Street constituents don't trust you because you're a Democrat, and Occupy doesn't trust you because of your ties to finance. I realize I'm caricaturing a little bit here, but do you feel caught in the middle like that?
Yeah, you know, Brian, certainly in a political world, when we get statements like we just heard from Mark that, you know, it's been nothing but tax increases. In the political world, of course I do. But look, you know what? If you just turn the volume down a little bit and talk to people, most people, almost everybody will acknowledge a couple of things. One, that the behavior on Wall Street, you know, particularly around the housing market and the derivatives that flowed from the housing market and all of that stuff, was crazy beyond belief. It would make a casino owner blush. But also people recognize that if they want a mortgage, if they want to borrow money to send their child to college, if they want to borrow money to build a small business, that they need those banks there operating efficiently and well. So, you know, if I can sort of set aside the rhetoric and the anger to remind people that we need a safe and vibrant financial services industry, that's what I try to do day to day, and that's where I keep my focus.
Nancy in Trumbull, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm very proud of our representative here, who is looking to find solutions that are cooperative rather than competitive. I think leaders right now, what we're looking for in the business world, are leaders who see that the world is much more complex. And, you know, we talk about wanting our government to act more like business. Well, in the business world, competitors are now cooperating with each other, realizing that they have to work together in some areas for the greater good, including the greater good of their stockholders. So I think what Representative Himes is doing along with his colleagues on this letter is exactly what you're seeing in the business world, is that we have to realize that today's competitors are tomorrow's, you know, collaborators on a lot of things. So I think it takes a lot of integrity and vision and confidence to move forward with something like this, and I think it is really part of the solution.
Thank you very much. And luckily for you, Congressman, the caller who said you were too far to the left was from Staten Island. The caller who said you were too far to the right was from Manhattan. The caller who said you got it just right is from Connecticut.
And from my district.
Yes, and Trumbull
right.
is in your district.
And, you know, Brian, this is really, you know, all of these comments point to something really important. We should all stand by our principles. Republicans need to stand, and by the way, there's a whole other conversation about whether, you know, where that has evolved over the last, I give the Republicans credit for founding the environmentalist movement in this country with Teddy Roosevelt, but that's a discussion for a different day. But we all should stand by our principles. Democrats need to stand up for rebuilding the American dream and for fairness. Republicans should stand up for their principles. But at the end of the day, if we're going to govern successfully, we're going to govern because we stand by our principles, but we compromise. And that shouldn't be a dirty word. And I was reminded the other day that we exist as a unified country because of a truly evil compromise. You know, 240 years ago, there was a compromise that said, in this beacon of liberty, in this country in which for the first time we will enshrine the fundamental rights of liberty and freedom for each and every man, we said, but we're not going to do that for black men and women. I mean, talk about an evil compromise, and yet that compromise allowed this nation to come together. And so that is a much stronger, obviously, example of the echoes that we hear now as we think about, you know, compromise and how we stand by our principles.
What do you think of Occupy Wall Street?
Well, you know, it's a little hard to answer that question because, you know, they're anti-nuclear, they're pro-student loans, they're anti-Wall Street, they're anti-corporation. You know, let me say this about them. They have put their finger on a truth that we, whether we're Democrats or Republicans, corporations or small businesses, would ignore at our peril, which is, frankly, a similar message from the Tea Party, which is most Americans today feel like the system is arrayed against them, that they're not being helped in achieving the American dream. And that could mean public schools that are not what they used to be. It could be that the fruit of my labor, the work I do, is taxed at 35% top rate, but the fruit of my capital, and you know, most Americans don't have a lot. They have more labor than they do capital, is taxed at 15%. America is looking at a lot of the structures out there, whether it's Wall Street or the tax code or the public schools, and saying, hey, these things really aren't set up to help me climb the ladder. And I'll tell you, we would ignore that message very much at our peril.
Do you think Wall Street, is being misunderstood by the occupiers?
You know, again, it's hard to know what they want. If they want more regulation of the derivatives market, and frankly, I haven't heard that on Occupy Wall Street, I'm with them 100% on that. If they want, you know, less exploitation of consumers through credit cards and shady loans, 100%. If their answer is that Wall Street should simply go away and that we shouldn't have a competitive financial services industry in this country, and I don't know that they're saying that either, I don't agree with that.
We had an Occupy organizer on the show yesterday who floated the idea of a constitutional amendment to repeal Citizens United, which declared corporations are people for the purpose of campaign finance.
Yeah. Well, this gets, I'll tell you, now you're really into something that I would love to not do any compromise on, which is generally the topic of the permeation of our system with money. It's corrupting. At best, it's a horrible waste of time and disruptive. And yes, Citizens United took a bad system where guys like me need to spend an awful lot of time raising money to get reelected and made it catastrophic, because we're going to see hundreds of millions of dollars out there against the president, for the president. You know, we're not going to know where that money came from. It could come from the Koch brothers. It could come from unions. It could come from China, because not only did Citizens United, you know, allow that to happen, but we failed, frankly, as a Congress to put disclosure. Just tell us where the money's coming from. So yeah, the permeation of money in our system is a real threat to our system.
Congressman Jim Himes, Democrat from Connecticut, member of the Finance Committee. We've got about 2 minutes left. Let's try to do a 2-minute drill and cut through a few things. Because of your Wall Street background, you got this coveted seat on the House Finance Committee, and you helped write the Dodd-Frank bank reform legislation. Now I understand you want to make some changes to Dodd-Frank. Real briefly, what changes?
You know, I spent 5 years doing affordable housing, which is also in the purview of the Financial Services Committee, and sometimes more important, actually, than what you're talking about. But look, you know, Dodd-Frank was, by and large, a very good step in the right direction, but it wasn't perfect. And I'll give you one example quickly. You know, derivatives, which, you know, scare everybody, and Warren Buffett called them weapons of financial mass destruction. Yes, they were. But they're also things that farmers use to bring certainty to what they're going to get for their crop 3 months from now. The former, the dangerous derivatives that were swapped amongst Wall Street, we need to come down hard on them, regulatorily speaking. The farmer who needs certainty around his pricing, we should use a very light hand on. That's an example.
President Obama was elected in part because he had a lot of Wall Street-related campaign donations. Now he's going populist in his rhetoric and compliments the Occupy movement. Is all that Wall Street money going to dry up or go to the GOP?
hard, hard, hard. hard to know. Look, it is certainly true that there is less enthusiasm for the president on Wall Street today than there was 3 years ago. And so, you know, what that does to money will play out over the next couple of months.
We talked about the letter to the super committee. I see you have another bipartisan thing with New Jersey Republican Scott Garrett, and he is really conservative on economics. He's like New Jersey's Ron Paul. Briefly, what are you doing together?
Yeah, I have a very funny and interesting relationship with Scott Garrett, because he is definitely a partisan warrior, and, you know, we'll get on the cable news shows and sort of grab each other's throats. On the other hand, we do a lot of work together, because he's a guy who has a genuine interest in making sure that we do have a stable financial services sector that isn't out of control. So, yes, we have dropped a bill that will clarify some of the regulations around derivatives to make sure that, basically, to make a long story short, to make sure that U.S. law is not hampering U.S. corporations operating in places like Germany and Britain, that they can be subject to the jurisdictions in which they are rather than the law extending to control them there.
With your background in finance, what do you think of Greece possibly holding a referendum on the Eurozone bailout plan? It seems like Papandreou thinks default might be more politically popular than the bailout's austerity plan.
Yeah, you know, that you asked, I think, the key question of the day, the week, and possibly the month. You know, we're spending all this time talking about this jobs bill and everything else. I think this week and next week, you know, if Greece refuses to take the deal that the Europeans have cobbled together, you have a very real risk that the European Union falls apart, that Greece leaves. And by the way, that has very, very severe implications for our economy here. You know, that's a topic for a whole other conversation, how a meltdown in Greece could necessarily have a huge effect on the real economy of the United States.
How?
Of
America. What are the top lines of that?
Well, you know, we have entities, and we watched John Corzine's firm, MF Global, go bankrupt last weekend because he had invested in the debt of European nation banks. And he is not alone. There are banks around the country who have invested, or not just banks, but insurance companies and hedge funds and whatnot, have invested in this paper that is very much at risk. And if it goes down, it will have an impact. Again, through the financial world, it will have an impact on the real economy here in the U.S.
And lastly, what do you think of the banking industry going back on its plan to change to charge monthly fees for debit card use? And what does it say about them that they even tried?
I think they really need to rethink the way they are communicating with the American public. You know, the banks may be the one group of people out there with lower approval ratings in the United States Congress, and to think that at this moment they were going to pick this moment to charge people $5 a month for a debit card use. Now, by the way, right, this is a service, right? We're going to pay something for it one way or another. So I'm not saying that things should be free in some, you know, fairy tale land, but to pick this moment to say we're going to charge you $5 for something every month that you've done for apparently for free over the years was just public relations wise a catastrophe.
Congressman,
it's the new Coke of banking.
Congressman Jim Himes, Democrat from Connecticut on the House Finance Committee, one of about 100 signatories, a little more than half Democrat, a little less than half Republican, to the super committee, urging them to really go big on compromise and deficit reform by Thanksgiving. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll get more on Greece later from Mark Whitaker, managing editor of CNN Worldwide. We'll hear next about why Governor Cuomo might veto the redistricting plan that might hit his desk for New York and why that matters to you. Stay with us.